Okay, well, podcast number one. My name is Don Hackett, and I'm sitting here with my beautiful wife, Lorene. And we're excited to try our hand at a podcast, and we're going to be talking about something that we both enjoyed tremendously. Actually, it's kind of one of the things that we had in common when we first started dating. So anyway, all things quantum mechanics, quantum physics, kind of a cauldron of all kinds of things. Just kind of to start with, you know, the basics, you know, back in 2006, the law of attraction was a big deal. Were you into, you know, the quantum physics world pretty heavy before law of attraction, hun, or?
No, I think that was my first introduction to it.
Yeah, it was kind of, I think a lot of people's, I mean, it was kind of my awakening. It got me re-spurred, if you will. And then a co-worker, it was kind of like the religion at work, the law of attraction and the secret and all that stuff. And then a co-worker said to me, you know, if you like this, there's a whole lot more. And I go, you know, I've done some reading in the past and I've kind of got some ideas. But anyway, he turned me on to a lot of cool stuff to read. And so one of the things I wanted to go over, actually, I wanted to go over three things in this first little episode, kind of to talk about my favorite parts and jump on in. But or my favorite three things when I'm talking to somebody for the first time about quantum mechanics and I just kind of relate to them what got me so interested in it. So the first one was the slit test, you know, that we've talked about. And for the listener out there, if you haven't read about the slit test, you definitely need to do that. It'll blow your mind. It's a pretty amazing scientific experiment, evidence that the observer affects the observed. And to get to the punchline or the end result of the dual slit test is that the observer affects the observed. And that's kind of mind-blowing. What that means, if you're not familiar with the dual slit test, is simply this, that scientifically they can prove repeatedly, and this is just one of many ways to prove that the observer, meaning a person, when a person observes something, he affects it. So how they do that in the laboratory in the dual slit test is they set up a photon gun that shoots photons at a board that has two slits in it. And the end result of the test is that when the test is observed and it's underway, the photon shooting one particle of light at a time, what the test shows is a specific pattern that you would expect if you were sitting there watching it. The outcome is exactly what you expect it to be. But when humans don't watch it, if they run the test without observing it, and then they look at the results of the test after the fact, what it shows is instead of light particles hitting the board behind the slits, it shows that a waveform is hitting the board, so to speak. Observed, there's interference of particles. Non-observed, there's no interference. So it's proof positive, and it's fascinating reading, but it's proof positive in the laboratory that when in the micro world, when something is not observed, when a person is not paying attention to it, it is in a waveform. It's an unrealized, or what the woo-woo people would call a field of infinite possibility. It's a wave, and when it's observed, it becomes a thing. So beforehand, it's soup. When you watch it, it's a thing. You want to add something to that, or?
Yeah, actually, and it might help to break it down if you understand the difference between waves and particles.
Well, yeah, particles make up the material world that we live in. I mean, particles that we're looking at or that we're experiencing, that's a better way to say it. Everything that you're experiencing when you look around the room, when you touch something, you're touching particles. when you're there's, but there's proof that particles unobserved are kind of this cosmic soup. It's kind of this magic potion of possibility, or again, like right. the woo-woo say, it's the infinite
field of potentiality.
Yeah, the field of potentiality, and when it's observed, then it. And so, how does that all work? Well, that's the intriguing thing, right? So that's the and the second point is this, and it's something that I had thought about in my head for years, and then as I read, I went, yeah. And then when I read about the dual slit test after the law of attraction became a big thing, and I read about the dual slit test, but it took me back to sound and
which is wave,
this energy, right? This energy that when well, we can, yeah, we can categorize it as waves, but let's just look at where sound is. And so when somebody hits a drum, you know, we say, well, the drum's making sound, I can hear it. And anybody walking down the street, it's the age-old question of if a tree falls in the forest and there was nobody there to hear it, did it make a sound? And, you know, we logic that out and say, well, of course. I mean, a sound's a sound. And the trick to that question is that sound, in order to have sound as you and I hear sound, in order to have sound, you have to have a listener. Because without an eardrum vibrating off of the external pressure of energy, and without the programming of your brain to interpret that as sound, because we're, you know, that's what we're doing. Our brain is interpreting what that motion in our ear and those pulses are meaning. There are people that don't hear because they don't have the mechanics in their ear to hear, but there are also people that don't hear that have ears that work perfectly well, but a brain injury has stopped them from hearing. And you really need that vibrating instrument in your ear, but you also need the software in your head to say, oh, that sounds like this, and to understand sound. But scientifically, we know that without a listener, if there were no ears and no programming interpreting that vibration as sound, then out there in that world without ears, there is just energy flowing. There's just energy moving around, and it's not making that, you know, the sound that the drum makes, but it is making, there is perhaps percussion and energy moving, but it's the result of your programming in your ears that makes sound.
Consciousness is responsible for collapsing the wave.
There you go.
As it were.
Yeah. And so that it kind of feeds that, you know, that you'll read those memes on social media, and you've seen the poster that says, you know, that are you in the universe or is the universe in you? And it kind of feeds that the universe is in you, because the bottom line is that whatever you perceive as reality, based on the equipment you have, the body that you perceive, and the software in your brain and how it's programmed to interpret, creates your reality. There are people out there that have a much different programming and interpret a reality in an entirely different way. You know, people that are blind or don't hear or that don't see color, or on and on and on. There's lots of different variations of people's minds or equipment, if you were, that give them a different reality. And so the question is, when you combine the slit test and you combine that with kind of thinking about how sound works and where it really is, you start to get kind of the puzzle starts to appear of, wait a minute, what's real, or where is it? So the third part of the puzzle is kind of a something that dawned on me years ago, learning about, and I got totally in debt, as you know. I mean, when PCs first came out, I was obsessed with computers, and you know, couldn't afford to have one, but I surely wanted one. And the first computer I ever got to lay my hands on was through work. But anyway, I've always been obsessed with computers, and then I finally got one, and I started learning DOS, and I started just, you know, soaking up as much as I could. Well, anyway, I was fascinated to understand that, you know, ones and zeros were, you know, binary code was the thing.
Everything is on and off in the universe.
Yeah, everything is, you know, a computer only knows yes or no, one or zero, on or off, yeah. And everything that a computer does is a combination of that. Every picture it draws, et cetera, et cetera. And if you want to see, and then it dawned on me the perfect example of that. If you want to ponder the perfect example of sound and three-dimensional world and color and all that stuff being made up of something other than what it appears, here's what you do. You take out an old DVD player and you watch a DVD, and you watch The Wizard of Oz, you know, and you hear the music in The Wizard of Oz, and you see the Munchkins and the Yellow Brick Road and the witch flying and all the things that make up The Wizard of Oz. So amazing. And now I'm a 1959 model. I was born in 59, so I go way back. When I was in elementary school, we watched 8mm or 16mm, I don't know what they were. Probably 8mm movies. But anyway, they would, you know, and they would turn off you'd have somebody go down to the audiovisual department and they'd roll the cart into the classroom. And
oh, yeah, we did that too.
Yeah, yeah.
And
my wife's much younger than I am. And they would roll the cart in, and the projector was on top of the cart, and you had the one guy that knew how to thread the film, right?
Yeah, there's always one guy in class.
Yeah, this is, oh, I can do it, you know, because the teacher tries it, but it does the bad loopy thing, and it's, yeah, it staggered or whatever, jumped up and down. But anyway, you got the film on there, and then you got to watch whatever the movie was. The one that pops into my mind was when we were trying to learn, we watched the movies on how to speak Spanish, which was a travesty that I was, you know, a daydreamer or struck by Susie in the Yellow Dress or something, but I'd never paid attention and regretted that my entire life. That they tried to teach me Spanish when I was a kid in elementary school, you know, Papito. I remember Papito, in those movies, but I didn't pay attention, and what a stupid thing. I regret
that.
I had
to learn it just to communicate with kids.
You know, oh my gosh, you know, I'm growing up in California. It's like native language, and how beneficial it would have been to learn.
Just to understand their slurs.
Yeah.
I guess so. But
those movies that we watched, they were celluloid pictures, right? And they shined a light through a celluloid picture, and so it made sense to some degree how that image was on the screen. You know, it was like a flip book. You know, it was a flip book. It was a light shining through images. But when you watch that DVD of The Wizard of Oz or whatever your favorite movie is, and you see it in high definition, living color, and all the great music and stuff like that, it's all coming from this source, which is a small, shiny disk. Fascinating. So a lot of people, I've asked this question, you know, over the years to people. I say, hey, what do you think is on that disk? Do you think that there's, you know, does it work like the film strips we used to watch where, you know, the images pass by the light, you know, blah, 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 blah. Most people guess yes, the people I've asked, but in fact, that's not the case. What's on that disk is code. It's just in compressed code, going back to zeros and ones. All of, you know, when you see that dog run across the field barking and chasing a butterfly and music playing, it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist on that disk. Code that a chip inside of the DVD player has been programmed to decipher and to react in a certain way and create a high definition 4K, 8K image that's as real as life, in higher resolution than the average person can see this 8K stuff. And the sound, you know, bigger than life, and the colors bigger than life. This amazing bigger than life experience doesn't exist. It exists, it might have existed, but it was broken down and put into code. And then that code was put onto a disk, those zeros and ones, and then the DVD player, think of that as your brain. The DVD player has programming, right? Certain DVD players can do certain things that other DVD players can't do, stereo or 4K or what, I mean, you know what I'm saying, is that there are earlier models and later models and et cetera, and it's not all hardware, a lot of it's programming too. So now the DVD players have, well, there aren't any DVD players now, but the last ones, you know, had smart TV apps built into them and things. But anyway, the programming, the software that programmed the chip and gave it the ability to read a DVD, that's your software, your brain, your the way that you see things based on your experiences from day one on this planet and the way you were taught and trained and the way that you interpret. All of those things are a result of your software and then taking in the data. But had your software been different, had your brain been different, the data might have looked entirely different. An example would be that we all know that sound pressure from the speaker, when the stereo speaker gets that electrical charge, right? That electrical charge comes through wires. It's not sound in the stereo. It's not sound on the DVD or coming across the internet. It's electrical pulses and code. And when the amplifier sends that energy to a speaker, to a coil in a speaker, and vibrates that speaker, right? All of a sudden, with electricity, they're at a certain pace. They're generating energy, generating this air pressure. And then your ear does and your brain does what you know that it, you know, sound. But if you didn't have ears at all, and if you had, let's say, hypersensitive skin that was extremely sensitive, you would say, wait a minute, pressure vibrating against my skin, we all know that, fluctuating things can sometimes create heat. Maybe you would perceive sound waves hitting you as an irritation or heat or something like that. And maybe without ever having ears and having no software to support ears, maybe you would perceive things in an entirely different way, right? So when you combine the slit test that shows that in the lab, that shows that just somebody walking in changes the light pattern of a test. And every single time that somebody's in the room watching the test, the light pattern does a certain thing. And every single time that somebody doesn't watch it and they just record it, it does an entirely different thing. Just the presence of a person changes the outcome. That's mind-boggling and makes you think, wait a minute, what does our presence have to do with anything? The observer affects the observed. And then you take and you go, okay, so sound, that's something that happens in my head. And we know by looking at a DVD that reality, heck, it might just be that as I perceive that I'm looking through my eyes right now out the window at, you know, this evening sun and the trees and things like that, that what I'm looking at might not actually be what I'm seeing. And you've read about where, you know, the eye is taking in far more than we're perceiving.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead. You had something to say.
Well, that was interesting. So I read a long time ago that a good reporter will try and write a story based on what somebody might see from the different four corners of the street, not just one. Right, so we'll try to look at it from at least four different viewpoints.
Nice.
So, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, perspective. Just change
right,
your perspective.
Four different perspectives. Because if you take four people looking at four different corners of a particular intersection, they're all going to have different vantage points.
Yeah, and I think that plays right into it.
It's the same thing, same situation. They're all looking at the same thing, but they're all going to have different vantage points.
And I think that takes us into more of a less woo-woo, just kind of talking about
perspective. Right, but it's practical.
Right, it's practical. Right. I think that makes a really good point. To go to the extreme other way, and I remember the first time somebody said, I think it was you actually, the first time somebody said woo-woo to me, about metaphysics or quantum mechanics or all things spooky. Yeah, I think it was, and I remember going, woo-woo, what's woo-woo? But then, the more that I dwell on it, meditate on it, read on it, go through, my personal thing, and the more that we talk about it and stuff like that, afterwards I sit and I think, woo is perfect because the reality is far more obscure, fascinating, mm-hmm. and magical than just what you think about you bring about, or that, if you're positive, positive things happen, or if you think about a white car, you'll start seeing white cars, or anyway, those coincidences and the neat things about the law of attraction. The law of attraction is way more woo-woo than that.
Right. It's like it's metaphysical and mystical and new age. It's all that stuff combined under this umbrella woo-woo without offending anybody. Not laughable, but it's...
I totally get it, and that's what I when I talk to you about, hey, we should do a podcast. It'd be fun to have some of the conversations that we have in podcast form, because I've always wanted to do one, and we have the time to do it. And just this conversation, spurs me to think, and feed off of our conversations and meditate deeper on the subject, and hopefully other people that I've listened to some of the podcasts. I just the other day I listened to a podcast on the law of attraction and it was an extremely popular podcast and lots of sponsors and things like that, and it never really talked about anything woo-woo, and it didn't actually even talk about the basic law of attraction. It was just like coping skills and how do you juggle the demands of life and stuff, and those are all good things, but I'm really kind of into the woo-woo of it all, because I think that there's a fascinating mystery I really believe that you can develop, and we read about all the time. But I think that the average person can. But we read about all the time where people develop skills to interact with that field of possibility, a different level of reality, so to speak. And I think that it's obtainable. And I think that how and why that's obtainable. And I'll just put in here that, let me ask you this. I mean, you spend probably 2 hours a day all total meditating, with several different sessions day in and day out, taking breaks for 30-minute or 15-minute meditation. The driver behind that is what?
There's this one that I really like to do. It talks about opening up the pineal gland, but what I find is it sort of takes you to a space where it blurs the lines between you and the field of potentiality, I guess. And while it's... what's the word I'm looking for? Postured as opening the pineal gland, and I guess it does that, but what I find, like I said, it opens my mind, and I just go into, when you let go, you're just in this space, and you're just kind of open and floating, and it's remarkable. So, it's a really great space to be.
So I want to talk, you know, in future podcasts, let's spend time talking about those experiences and what you're getting from meditation, because we all get our own thing from it. But right now, I'm just kind of curious as to, like, I know what my driver is for meditation. What is the reason to do it? Not what you get, like, not what you're experiencing, but why do you take the time?
It centers me.
Yeah. So, let me just say that for me, the results of meditation for me is that, yeah, it does definitely center me. It does give me a sense of, I get a sense of doing what I know I should do. So it gives me a sense of I'm doing what is required of me to progress.
Right. I mean, like, why do you brush your teeth?
Yeah, to give myself a chance to connect with my higher self. I know that these are the things that I need to do. So it gives me all of those senses, but the driver for me in the beginning, I mean, the why is, hey, I want to connect. I want to connect with something other than what I know. I want to experience more than I know. I want to experience the unexplained. I want to connect with this other part of me that I don't know. I want to get inspired, guidance, direction, power, something. I want to get something out of this. And that's my driver for, you know, the reason of sitting down. You know, the results are, yeah, a feeling of accomplishment, a feeling of trying to, you know, there are times, and I've told you about we'll save this for another podcast, but different sensations that I get in meditation. But the driver for me is seeking a glimpse, seeking a peek into that quantum field. When I want something and to happen in my heart, I go, okay, well, you know, you can read all the different people's feelings on that, but I know that everything that I experience is by my own design. All of the bad, which is hard to understand, by my design. All of the good by my design. Mm-hmm. And it's a tough one. It's like, and I remember getting into a conversation about this once at work years and years ago, and somebody said, you know, you can't, I mean, you're saying that horrible things have happened in this world. And I go, let me stop you. You know, back in the religious world, you know, people would say, well, why does God let a horrible thing happen to a baby?
Right.
Right. And the answer to that, which I think is, you know, from, if you want to take that perspective, if you want to get, you know, put on a religious hat, the answer to that is you're looking at it through a microscope, and that's not God's plan. You know, you're looking at this like it's, you know, it's tragic and it's horrible and it's all those things from our perspective, but not from the bigger picture. That's always the answer. Well, in the quantum world, I still believe there is a, you know, there is one true, positive, powerful being of which I'm a part of, and I'm a expressed thought of that being. And why might I have some horrific thing happen to me? Or why, you know, do horrific? I mean, horrific. Because when I say I believe that all of it is our conjuring, I believe that without exception. I think that that's how it works. I think that science and my faith says that's how it works. So it's the same thing. It's like microscope, you know. Goes back to those silly things of, you know, how would you know what you liked unless you knew what you didn't like? How would you you know, you didn't want, you know, we're experiencing creation and expansion and growth and understanding and exploration, and we're experiencing all of this, and we're not experiencing it with guardrails, right? There are no guardrails, and so there's all kinds of bad alleys to go down. It's just part of the deal. It's just part of the deal. And so anyway, I accept that. But I think that the woo-woo world is the real world. I think that the slit test proves it. I think that when you think about sound, or when you think about what you're perceiving as, you know, when you look out of your eyeballs right now and across the street, think about the fact that you just might be a DVD player. And think about the fact that you just might be... you know, that your vision is actually the projection on the TV screen, and what's coming into you might be very, very different than what you see. And we know, and we can prove in the lab, that you're having an effect. You're altering what's happening. What you're altering, what you're looking at. You're altering what happens next just by you being there, because that magical thing that the surgeons can't find, you know, that they always say that I don't remember the exact quote, but basically it's the surgeon that's cut into people's heads and cut into people's chests, and he's, I've seen every inch of the inside of a person, but I can't find a soul, don't know where that is. You know, it might be able to find pulses, electronics, and things like that. But, you know, that soul, that driving spark, that's the designer and of your experience. And so, anyway, I hope that you'll find it interesting to listen to this as we try to focus in and narrow in each podcast on maybe one specific thing and try to get into it as much as we can to give us something to think about and how we are experiencing the world. And kind of like meditation, the results might be warm and fuzzy, and that's good. But ultimately, the reason why I study this, why I think about, why I do, I'm looking for that way to connect, way to connect at a higher level, to interface at a higher level, to do better for myself, my family, my strangers, to say, hey, listen, I know that this is I live in a mental universe, that the universe is mental, that the universe exists by the perceiver and doesn't exist without the perceiver. And if that's the case, how can I better control that experience and better? And so that's the driver behind it, is how can I better, more serving myself and others, manipulate the reality that we're in? 2 cents, closing arguments.
I got nothing for now.
Okay. Again, Don Hackett and beautiful wife Lorraine. We're actually sitting here in Happy Valley, Oregon, recording our first podcast. We've got some time, and we thought this would be a fun exploration, and we hope you will enjoy them.
Thank you.
Bye.